It's time for Twig This Week in Google. I'm Jason Howell, filling in for Leo Laporte one last time. Today, we've got Jeff Jarvis joining us. Also, Ant Pruitt from Tech Republic is going to join to talk about a number of stories Google-related. We've got tons of hardware announcements in October, not just Google's event. Where in the world has Larry Page been hiding? Oh, yeah, his Caribbean island. Gmail Offline is apparently giving Jeff an aneurysm. Google Home Mini is the most popular smart speaker, and more. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 474, recorded on Wednesday, September 19th, 2018. Octothorpe Life. This Week in Google is brought to you by MasterClass, online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. Visit masterclass.com/twig to unlock access to every MasterClass for one low annual price. And by Grammarly, the communication tool that helps improve your writing for every occasion. Start writing more confidently for work, school, and even on the go. It's a great way to double-check your important papers, documents, and even avoid future typos. Get 20% off Grammarly Premium today at grammarly.com/twig. And by Wink, the best way to discover new wines that you'll love. Go to trywink.com/twig to get $20 off your first shipment. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. That's what Twig stands for. Isn't that amazing? I'm Jason Howell. I'm sitting in one last time for Leo Laporte, who is, he's got to be sad at this point. He's at that point in his vacation where, like, the end is near, and you're, like, trying to, like, squeeze every last inch of whatever out of your awesome vacation, but you know it's time. It's time to return to reality. Anyways, I've had a lot of fun sitting in for him, so I'm happy to be here one more time. Joining us this week, we do not have Stacy, but we do have Jeff Jarvis. How's it going, Jeff?
And I'm not in a hotel somewhere with horrid Wi-Fi.
Well, I mean, I guess we kind of had you last week for maybe 2 minutes, I think, about.
See, the weird thing is, everybody else thinks you look like dead and miserable, and you don't know it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty choppy. At a point, it was just like, yeah, this just isn't going to work.
It looked like the worst I'd ever had, because you guys were just, forget it, Jeff. Just forget it.
We're done. We're moving on. Well, we're happy to have you on such a pristine
delighted to be here.
Connection today. And joining us once again, Ann Pruitt. Ann, I'm a huge fan of your work, and it's great to get you back on TechRepublic.com, CBSInteractive.com. Sounds like your work is broadening at CBS Interactive.
Yeah, it is. Thanks for having me on here. It's always a pleasure to
absolutely
be here.
Absolutely, man. We were talking.
Always good to have you.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about about things kind of catching up before the show, and realized you were more or less in the path of the hurricane that just passed through North Carolina.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Now, granted, where I live is about 200 miles inland, but that storm was massive, and it just sat there. You know, I believe at one point they said it was moving about 2 miles per hour.
Yes.
And it just sat there. Wow. My friends in Raleigh, they took a beating. But by the time it got here to the Charlotte area, it was mostly rain. So it wasn't that much wind. It was enough wind to knock down a few flimsy trees. But it was a lot of rain, lots and lots of rain. The poor dogs around here, they didn't know what to think.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Instead of going for a run, they go for a swim, I suppose.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, and then it sounds like your neighborhood is okay, but like,
oh yeah.
But beyond that, like, you're kind of stuck in your neighborhood. So it's a good thing you know your neighbors and your own community.
It's nice. I have a decent surroundings near me anyway. So yeah. I'm fine staying right here in my own yard.
Yeah. Right on. Well, we're happy you're okay and safe. And
Thank you.
And it's great to get you on. I mean, related to this, we might as well mention it. It's a real quick hit, but Google apparently is matching up to $1 million in Hurricane Florence relief. Apparently, you can donate to the American Red Cross, and 100% of that donation is going to go to the charity. And you know, $1 million in Google money is a drop in the bucket, but
right.
Still, that's good. You know, that helps, obviously. So, So if you're going to give, you might as well give through that and get it matched. So let's see here. Where do we even begin? Do we begin with Larry Page? The curious case of what's that?
That's a little old, isn't it?
I don't know. Is it? I don't know. I mean, this has kind of been, it's kind of been an interesting scenario, right? Larry Page used to be the face of the company. We have hardly heard anything from this guy. Meanwhile, the company is, I don't know, more under the microscope now than it ever has been. Yet he is mostly out of public view, hasn't really been in public view since 2013 as relates to product launches or earnings calls, 2015 as related to any sort of press period. Like, you just don't see from this dude anymore.
Yeah, that's apparently, what I'm saying. We haven't seen him for years.
No,
so,
apparently he spends all his time on his Caribbean island, which I didn't realize he has a Caribbean island, but he does.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But he has the power to be in that position and not be at these different meetings and things like that. That's why he hired the people he hired, because he trusts in their abilities.
Yep.
And I mean, and Mr. Pichar is a sharp cat, you know. Yep. So he doesn't necessarily have to jump on all of these things and grandstand and whatnot. That's why he spent the bucks to hire those people.
I want to move on to Google Island with Larry. Remember that was one of his last major huge IO appearances, was talking about having an island.
Oh, that's right.
With Google laws. Right. So I want to move on. Fine. Larry, come on. Invite us in.
That's, that's what he's doing. That's what he's spending all his time on. Yeah, he's creating his Google
idea.
Island.
It wasn't me.
Someday, maybe, you know, I think what we're leading up to is somewhere down the line, I don't know if it's 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, or whatever, the Made by Google event, much like Apple's event is now made at its new spaceship campus. The Made by Google event will be held at the Caribbean island.
On Google Island.
The Google Island, whatever that ends up being down the line. And I would love my invite.
Done.
I would love to get an invite for this. I will go there
and I will defect.
Dang, I forgot to move back home.
Yeah.
Isn't that a bummer?
I was with a Googler today by chance, just having coffee. And I said, the Pixel 3 next week. And my Pixel, she said, you are a fanboy, aren't you? I said, yeah.
Heck yeah. So you've been following, I mean, we're talking about Made by Google, so we might as well just jump right into that. I'm sure you've been following, Jeff, because this is probably your next phone, right? The 3 or the 3XL.
What are you thinking? I found it really interesting with the Apple announcement. Who was it? BuzzFeed's review said, hey, it's fine, but you really no rush to upgrade. Really nothing much. Mm-hmm. And I could imagine, I'm trying to, you know, every time it happens, I'm a chump. Like Leo, I'll jump and buy it. At least I don't have to buy 20 brands like he has to buy. But I don't know. It depends on whether the Pixelbook, presuming we have that, is magnificent. I'm going to try to avoid buying both this time. I'll see if I succeed.
I don't know. You could be buying multiple things, because sounds to me like there's going to be a whole lot of different types of devices there. Obviously, the couple of Pixelbooks, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. I think you were off on that episode. But yes, the Pixelbook lineup, that I think there's going to be either two or three that are rumored to appear. The Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL, which we see some new renders that have appeared in the last couple of days, this time with Google's kind of fabric casing on the back, which I think they had a fabric casing a couple of years ago.
Maybe they did, which I liked, by the way.
I liked it too.
It was a nice case, so I hope they do it again. It'd be nice.
Yeah. So we're seeing more and more of these things. I mean, this is just the most leaked device in the history of the world, as far as
and I'm really sure they're just, you know, planning that just ever so slightly. Okay, make sure we leak a video or leak an image out on Tuesday. Okay, now we'll do another one on Friday night when we think everybody's out partying and whatnot. You know, just they know what they're doing. It's marketing 101. You know,
yeah.
The colors though. The mint phone looks like a praying mantis pooped.
It actually reminds me of the Nextbit. Do you remember the Nextbit Robin?
Yeah.
It kind of had a little bit of that color to it.
That color.
But yeah, mint, white, black, and then hidden in the source code somewhere on that webpage, somebody found a fourth a reference to a pink color. So
why would the color of the hardware be in source code?
This is a great question. I mean, it basically what this is tied to is some sort of a promotional page to drum up, you know, kind of interest and anticipation around the upcoming announcement. And when you go to the page, it kind of has an outline of a phone, and the back color of the page, the background is either, you know, this mint color or black, you know, with a two-tone that matches the back of a Pixel device. And for whatever reason, hidden in the source code of the page, there is a fourth color that was
not the phone. It's the source code of the page.
It references this fourth pink color. And if the other colors were actual colors of the phone, one could argue, oh, well, maybe this is a fourth color of the phone. Maybe they're going to have their rose gold or their pink.
Or somebody had a bet. Can we get this week in Google to talk about the green phone?
Exactly. Yes. How much of this stuff is being planted? How much are we playing ourselves?
You can get it on TechCrunch. Go ahead.
What's that, Ant?
No, go ahead, Mr. Jarvis.
I was going to say, what I'm not going to buy, I don't think, is the Google smart speaker, since I think I've used mine like twice on the show only.
So which one are you talking about? You're talking about the Google Home?
Yeah, I have the Google Home thing with the screen event.
Oh, the one with the screen. So you,
the Home Hub thing. Yeah, I'm not enthralled.
Not really into it. I mean, I couldn't use it because my kids would get fixated on the YouTube aspect. Have you used any of these devices, the ones with the screen app?
I didn't want any part of them. I don't own the Home Max or any of that stuff. I never really wanted any of those devices in my house. I'm connected enough with my cell phone, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I just never really had the need for it. And plus, I like my audio to sound good.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to spend, you know, $300 on something that's audio related, it better really sound good and not just necessarily be something to put in my living room, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Mac sounds pretty good, but I mean, it is pretty expensive. But
it's kind of big and ugly.
It is a little big. Yeah, and it's pretty ugly too. Well, apparently Google Home Hub is a device that we might see on the October 9th event. And this would be Google's own branded version of, you know, a Google Home with a screen, a 7-inch screen in this case. And actually the back of it, if you click on the other image in that carousel that shows the back, it really does kind of look a lot like the Google Home Max from the fabric and kind of rounded, curvy aspect of it. But yeah, so I think it makes perfect sense that Google would want to have their own of these. It's interesting that they let third parties release them before Google got around to releasing its own. They let the third parties kind of scoop them by half a year, basically.
The only thing that bothers me about next week is the pricing. I'm not sure what the pricing is going to be, but I just can't grasp the fact that we're paying $1,000 for a dadgum cell phone again. You know, it just boggles the mind. If I'm not able to run Premiere Pro on it or something like that, why am I having to spend that much cash on a smaller computer? You know?
Yeah.
Laptops are cheaper than that, and laptops can run Premiere Pro.
Laptops really, can fit really in your good pockets. Point. Right? There's a certain value, I suppose. I'm not saying that $1,000 is the right price for a phone, but they are priced differently. For better or for worse. Like it's not the same. But yet I don't know how to explain it, but it is very
different. My justification, Ant, is that it's the single device I use more than anything else.
Yeah, right.
And that's part of your complaint too. But I know I'm justifying to me and my wife that I'm spending $1,000 on a phone. My wife, who's kept the same phone for the last 22 years, because they're all too darn big. Well, yeah. Speaking of which, that was a fascinating. Did you guys cover that much? The feminist outrage about the size of the Apple phones?
No,
I heard a little bit about that on Twitter.
That women complaining that they're too large, and then bozos going after the women for complaining that they're too large on Twitter, and back and forth is the usual wonderful discourse we have in the station now.
Right.
But they're offering nothing but really large phones.
Apple has basically given up on the smaller form factor, and there are a lot of people with smaller hands that still want the smaller phones. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there's only one way to fix that: don't buy them.
Well, the sales go down.
You know, when you got to text with your when your kids are grown, the only way you talk to them is texting.
My son is talking on a Nexus 6 with a shattered screen right now. you think I care about the device? You don't have to buy these phones, you know.
Yeah,
I got a feeling I'm still going to get sucked in, but we don't have to buy these phones. That's the only way we're going to send a message of we don't have to have a $1,000 cell phone. You can figure out a way to bring the cost down. Not to really rag on Apple, but you know, they mentioned all of those recycled parts in that iPhone, but it's still $1,000. You know, I don't get it.
Brand premium. I mean, there's a piece of it that is that also, right?
It's like buying perfume.
Yep.
Right? You're buying a few drops of chemicals and you're paying a fortune for it. It's brand premium, right?
Yeah, because you can say that the perfume I use or the phone that I use is the one that everybody wants to see in their hand. I got it. I was willing to pay the premium to get it.
So, Jason, Dr. Android, yes. If this weren't a business expense for you, what in a new Android phone would make you say, yeah, I got to get that?
Man, you know what? That is a really challenging question for me to answer because at this point, it's true. I review phones. I review phones that come out, and so therefore, I really rarely ever have to pay for a phone because I've always got a new one to review. Or you know, here at Twit, we buy the phones that we bring in. We definitely buy the Pixels that I end up with. So my perception on this is very skewed. I do think that $1,000 is too much for a phone. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And this is a really good, I've got the Pixel XL too. It's a really good phone.
Yeah.
And what are you carrying now? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry, that's better.
I thought you were just really wanted us to guess. Like, I don't know. I should know. So what is it? I'm sorry.
The Pixel XL 2. I've had both of the Pixels.
Okay.
And it's, I remember when I got the first one and I did my little review of it and whatnot. And I thought the device was nice for the hardware, but I thought it was really, really overpriced. Personally, I'm getting a little bit of hardware fatigue when it comes to smartphones because they're not really innovating. The cameras are changing because of the software inside. But for the most part, these things, they all look the same and they almost all do pretty much the same stuff, depending on how much money you spend.
Yep.
And it's just too much now.
Did we get too used to expecting really big updates and now it's just impossible to impress us? Because
I think that's fair, you know, but that's because we were fortunate enough to be around when this stuff all got started years ago. And we were able to see those huge incremental jumps each season when it was time to get a new device. Like I could remember seeing the Droid X for the first time and that 4.3-inch screen just blew me away. And then the Note came out and how everybody laughed at it being so big.
Oh yeah.
And we just continued to iterate with these really, really nice features. And then finally it came to sort of a stalemate, you know. We just started getting more RAM and more disk space.
So are there disk space on the phone? I like that. I had to put a floppy into my phone.
You can hear it wind up and everything. Yeah.
They'll soon be big enough for a 5-inch floppy. I don't even know anymore because I'm so much into La Vida Google. Are there three fools left who still sleep out to get an iPhone the night before it arrives?
On iPhone release day?
I don't think I've seen that.
There's certainly not the news coverage of it that there once was.
Maybe that's why I don't see.
Yeah, I'm sure. Guaranteed, exactly. There's a certain number of people that are willing to sleep out there and make sure they are at the front of the line for whatever reason, whether it's necessary or not. That's another question.
We have.
Oh, it was, ridiculousness. Absolutely.
You know, I like the idea of Nexus back in the days with those phones. They were not terribly expensive. They wasn't the best of phones, but you still had a pretty nice experience because of the clean operating system.
Right.
You know, and I wish that we could continue down those same lines instead of having to spend so much more money on these smartphones. And people, I hate this, but people are going to continue to buy these things, and it's just going to make it worse down the road, especially when you have Verizon and AT&T saying, you know what, you don't have to pay $1,000 right now. Just give us $50 right now. Give us another $70 next month. And then the next month, give me another $70 and so on and so on. And people are thinking, oh, okay, I'm getting a deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole notion of the subsidized phone, you know, just one day when just left.
Right.
All right.
And I never went for the subsidized phone deal because I didn't want to be trapped. Of course, because I'm stupid enough and I keep on buying these phones year after year. But I didn't want to be trapped.
Right. Yeah.
My last car I kept for like 12 years or something, and I didn't lease it. Well, let's say, you know, so oddly, I didn't want to be trapped with the car, but then I kept it for 12 years. You know?
Sounds smart to me. It does seem like we've got a bunch of hardware announcements coming up in October. Everything's hitting in October, right? So we've got, you know, obviously we have the Made by Google event happening October 9th. Microsoft has a Surface event October 2nd. Huawei has an October event for the Mate 20 and the Mate 20 Pro in London. Razer, we're hearing rumors pointing to an October 10th date for the Razer Phone 2. But beyond that, then you start to get into, you know, Samsung's event. They have an October 11th event that they've now announced. Four times the fun, a Galaxy event is how they promoted this on their invite. It says more ways to express yourself than ever before. And there are rumors that point to this being a Galaxy phone with four cameras. So you're talking, Ant, about, you know, ways that these phones can differentiate themselves. It seems like right now the push is definitely around the camera. And making the camera as good as it possibly can be, which, by the way, the Pixel does with a single camera, and it's probably considered the best smartphone camera that there is right now, one camera.
Yep.
A lot of the other companies are just throwing cameras onto their device to, like, boost the number to increase the quality of it, or so we can assume.
That's the fact of the matter.
Yeah.
Selfie cell phones.
Yeah.
And the better you can make that customer look with that phone in their environment so they can share it out and be braggadocious all over social media, the more those phones you're going to sell. Samsung does a great job of tapping into the psyche of everybody and giving you all these cutesy bells and whistles to say, hey, this is going to make you look great. Buy this phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy into that.
Well, there are a lot of people that do, right? The selfie camera is probably the more used camera in a lot of people's toolbox than the other, you know, the rear facing camera. And then you're, you know, going back to the Pixel 3 is expected to have two front facing cameras while still having the single rear facing camera. So they're going all over the place.
Google knows it's all about the selfie.
Yeah. I'm very curious to know why the two on the front, if that's a security measure for like face scanning.
Yeah. I wonder if it's a sensor, an additional sensor.
Yeah. Or what it's for. Or is it for wide shots or whatever? So Samsung's not the only company doing this. Like, let's throw a ton of cameras on the phone. LG also has an announcement coming up October. Is it 3rd or 5th? It might be the 3rd. They say, come see what's next. They tout in the ad specifically, LG V40 ThinQ, LG's fourth flagship this year, by the way. So they've been releasing a lot of flagships. The invite even says take five, so it's hard to know whether that means this is their fifth attempt at a flagship this year, or does that mean there's five cameras? And that's what a lot of people are thinking. There might actually be five cameras on this phone, two on the front and three on the back.
I'm waiting for them to put cameras on the side.
Right.
So
side-firing cameras.
Way. Yeah.
And you're the photographer of the group. What could you do with side-firing cameras?
Hey, that's how you get those 360 images.
Right.
You know? I could totally see something crazy
like that.
Just let the
software stitch it together, you know.
I could totally see something crazy like that, but I don't know who has the guts to do it, because there is a market. There is a market for those big octagons or whatever that has like 8 different cameras on them.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Alex Lindsay has one. There's a market for that because it's an immersive bit of content that you can create. If you can put that on a phone, why not? But I don't think anybody has the guts to do it just yet.
Are you talking about Jump is one of the examples of
Jump. That was it.
Right. Yeah. The kind of like 360 degree array of little cameras that create a full wraparound image. I don't know how necessary that would be if you just had 2 fisheye lenses, one on the front, one on the back of a phone. That would be good enough too, but who knows? Who knows? All I know is that in phone companies' rush to try and keep innovating, they're either doing crazy designs like the what was the phone a couple of months ago that actually had the top that opened up? It hid the front facing camera until
the motor,
which apparently was more elegant than I figured it would be.
Yeah, because we want moving parts inside of our smartphones. Yeah.
I'm not sure I buy that. Longevity wise, I don't think that holds up over time. But so they're trying to innovate. They're trying to do what you were talking about. And
yeah, I give them credit for that. But that's just something that's not necessarily practical. But then again, is any of this stuff practical when it comes to smartphones? Mm. Most of the time, no.
No, not really. The one that we haven't mentioned is the OnePlus 6T, which OnePlus has been teasing pretty heavily ahead of an October announcement. I don't think we have a date for this yet. Their latest bit of news, they've confirmed that there will not be a headphone jack on this new phone. So they've joined the masses. This is the first OnePlus phone to eject the headphone jack in place of an USB-C port and an included dongle. So Samsung's holding steady, though. I got to give Samsung credit.
I give them credit for that. I don't like their software, but I love their hardware.
Yeah.
And the fact that I still use a dongle and wired headphones is one reason why I give them credit. Because I hate Bluetooth earbuds and Bluetooth headphones because it always gives me like interference. I don't care where I go. I don't care what I wear, what song, what device. I always have interference with Bluetooth and it's annoying. But every time I plug in a wired headset, no issues. And I have great quality sound with my little Sennheiser earbuds.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. I've come around a little bit on Bluetooth.
Really?
So the Jabra 65T Elites are the ones that I use. I don't get interference with them. And I expect interference when I use Bluetooth devices, and I don't get it with that. I don't get any dropouts. I don't get interference. So as long as it continues to work as well as my wired headphones do, then more and more I'm like, okay, I get it. But most earphones that I've used don't do that. So it's not dependable. I just happen to get lucky, I feel like.
I need to write that down. The Jabra, what's it called?
65T Elites. Those are the ones that I have. And they've got really great battery life. You know, the little case that charges it up. You hardly ever have to charge that sucker. They sound great. I feel like they give you good isolation. I like them a lot. And they're not that expensive in the grand scheme of things. They're like $160, $160, $150, somewhere around there. You could probably find them on sale for like $140. But I would check those out. So let's take a break, and then we'll jump into a whole lot more news. We got a lot of stuff in the dock today, and we've hardly even scratched the surface yet. But let's take a moment to thank the sponsor of this episode of Tech News Weekly. Tech News Weekly. This week in Google. Let me just say, Leo's been gone a really long time. I've been filling in a lot of his shows, and my brain is mush at this point.
I know in your sleep you talk about your other shows. Yeah.
My apologies. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Masterclass. If you guys have not checked out Masterclass, it's really something special because you end up watching kind of walkthroughs on people who are masters of their craft as far as how they do what they do, and they're brilliant at what they do, yet you almost get to sit in the room with them and learn from them. Imagine learning new recipes from Gordon Ramsay, photography tips from Annie Leibovitz, so many other people. Like you go in here, you're going to see an endless list of recognizable, notable names at the top of their craft, and you can do that with Masterclass. Masterclass offers online classes taught by the best in the world. Each class is shot with cinematic production quality. The quality is really top-notch. Offers on-demand lessons loaded with exclusive content that you're only going to find on Masterclass. And we're talking hours per. So each of these is, you know, it's broken up. It's almost like reading a book. It's broken up into chapters that focus on specific things. And all of it's being taught by these people that you know very well. Samuel L. Jackson. He's awesome, and you can learn from Samuel L. Jackson. You know that's going to be awesome. You can choose lessons from classes taught by over 35 masters. Malcolm Gladwell on writing, Ron Howard on directing, astronaut Chris Hadfield on space exploration. Like, it's just kind of crazy when you start going through here. Serena Williams, Stephen Curry, and so many awesome names. Hans Zimmer. So you just kind of filter through the list. You're guaranteed to find something that's going to appeal to you. And whether you're doing this to learn specifically, or maybe you're just doing it out of curiosity, right? Like, I love a really good documentary, and I love learning about things. And that's kind of what I see in Masterclass. I might not necessarily be, you know, expecting to become a space explorer somewhere in the course of my lifetime. But you better believe I want to listen to someone who's done it and experience through their eyes and their vision what that is like and what it takes to have that kind of determination. So it's really fascinating stuff. Your new classes always added, always being added. Whether you're pursuing your passion or developing your career, you're going to find a Masterclass that is perfect for you. Masterclass has even been featured by the New York Times, Vanity Fair, and ESPN. So check it out for yourself, and guaranteed you're going to find some really cool stuff to watch. Visit masterclass.com/twig to unlock the access to every Masterclass for a year. You're going to gain unlimited access to over 35 world-class masters, all for one surprisingly low annual price. That's masterclass.com/twig, and you'll get unlimited access to Masterclass, and you'll be addicted. Learn from the best in the world at masterclass.com/twig. And now back to tech news. Well, no, never mind. This week in Google. We'll see if I can prevent myself from doing that again throughout the course of this show. My apologies. Hey, did you hear about Android Pie and the sudden settings change that happened on a number of Pie devices?
Yes, I thought I was losing my mind.
So it happened to you.
It happened to me. I'm sitting there trying to watch the weather reports and stuff at the time. And you remember when I was on All About Android, that storm radar app that I shared with you? Mm-hmm. I was going through that trying to follow the path, and that little red icon popped up. And I'm like, what did I push to make that happen? And it just sort of caught me off guard, and I turned it off. But it wasn't long after I saw on Twitter everybody was up in arms, like, I didn't turn this on. And it's pretty scary. But the thing is, I'm surprised it took this long for us, as in the public, to catch Google in doing something like that.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sure there's been an experience. Right.
Did you experience this, Jeff?
The battery saver going on without me asking. Well, here's the weird thing. I swear that's happened to me like four times over the last year.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
So there must be some combination of gestures and things will turn it on that I don't know about or whatever it is. But yeah, it's happened to me more than once. And you know what? No big deal. World didn't fall apart.
Sure. I kind of thought before I knew that it was an actual thing that happened, I just assumed that it was like a butt dial. Like, I had it in my pocket and the screen woke up and something pushed and, oh, my battery saver mode is on. But then I realized, oh, well, no, actually this was pushed out by Google. Google said it was an internal experiment to test battery saving features. It was mistakenly rolled out to more users than intended. But what this story ended up doing was kind of alerting people that may not have considered it or thought about this as a possibility before, that even when you own your phone, Google still can own your phone if it really wants to.
Yeah, but Google also gives us security updates and things like that that we're quite grateful for.
Absolutely. Sure.
Doesn't internal mean internal to Google and its four walls and offices and whatnot? That's what I would take as internal testing. Mm-hmm. If it's going out to other users, then that's more like a pilot testing. And you would like to assume that they notified a group of pilot testers or beta testers or what have you.
Right.
That didn't seem like this was the case here. So I didn't like the wording in their little statement.
And you know, you brought up an interesting point too, and which is that when you were looking at this, when you were looking at your phone and noticed that it happened, it was right around a time of, you know, pretty big disaster was taking form around you. We talked about this a little bit on All About Android last night. My initial inclination was to be kind of what you're talking about, Jeff. Like, yeah, of course Google can do this. I kind of always assumed that they could, and no big deal. I just turned it off and moved on with my life. The extension of this, however, is what if an accident like this does happen? And let's say, in the example I used last night, I think it's perfectly fitting to, you know, this hurricane. What if they accidentally trigger do not disturb? And what does do not disturb do? It mutes your phone. It blocks your notifications. You see absolutely nothing unless you happen to notice that there's a little circle with a line through it on your display that tells you that you're being blocked from all this stuff. So hurricane is passing through. You miss a message from someone who needs your help or something like that.
Help.
Because that happens. And then suddenly there's a big, there's a payload attached to this mistake. And so to that end, it's kind of silly that an accident like this did happen. Sure, it didn't end up being a big deal as far as we know, but it certainly could have.
Well, I was thinking the same thing, that there's this stuff where you can control your kid's phone. Which sounds just fine.
Right.
And what if your kid's out and, you know, at a party and needs to call you and you all know every day at, you know, 4 o'clock, we cut them off because there's too much phone going on. Mm. Those kinds of it's also like people wanting to have theaters cut off all cellular access. But what if there's a surgeon in the room? These Uber efforts to change things on us. Yeah, that worries me.
Right. Family Link is the Google version of what you're talking about.
Right.
They actually just had an update, which they're expanding their features to teens. Before, it was just kind of narrowed in on children under 13 so that parents could kind of monitor their use and everything. And now they're expanding it so that it can be used for teen accounts as well, to do exactly like what you're saying, to use Assistant to say, hey, G, lock Heather's device or whatever.
I predict the next version of the story will be that husbands and wives can do it to each other.
Right. Well, you know, and there were a lot of people that see changes like this and they're like, it's not okay. We are conditioning our children to live in some sort of a surveillance position by apps like these. I can see both sides of that, I suppose. I mean, I'm a parent, so I'm struggling with certain issues along these lines, but my kids are still very young, so I haven't got to the really challenging time.
You just wait, Henry Higgins, until new technologies do things you can't imagine.
Yeah. Totally.
They're smart. Your kids are smart. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
They'll be okay.
I know.
There was a study at NYU I saw last week that looked at who's sharing the worst of the fake news crap. Mm-hmm. And they had like 1,500 of the worst. And then they looked at Facebook at who's sharing it. And guess what? It was white men over 65. And all these interventions we want to have, the kids are sharing all this stuff. The kids are fine. The kids get it just fine. They're fine. It's grandpa and ma and or dad that are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids are okay. Kids will figure it out.
Kids will be all right.
Fine. They'll be fine. We old. I speak as an old fart. We old farts are the one who are screwing up the world. Kids are okay.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I think you're right. I mean, obviously that's the way it is. Like, it's impossible for us to understand the depth of the level of understanding that kids who are growing up in an age where there is nothing other than accessibility to this kind of stuff, what their understanding truly is, because they like they've lived their life through it. We've kind of emerged into it, and we've had to reanalyze and reevaluate. And I'm sure there will be things in their lives that they will have to reevaluate and reanalyze because their kids will be the natives in that regard. But yeah, it's hard to know the right way.
I'm telling you, it's real hard to teach and, you know, try to use Gilligan's Island references. It doesn't work. It's
dang it, that should always work.
No, we're not dang it. No, what was that you said before?
Dagnabbit?
No, was that Dagnabbit? No, what'd you say?
Oh, you're muted again.
You're muted.
I hate when I do that. Dadgummit.
Dadgummit. That's it. Dadgummit. I think that's a show title.
Dadgummit.
It's actually been a show.
Is it one M or two?
Oh, has it?
On Twitch. It has, okay. It's a show title one time.
All right.
It's your signature?
I think so.
That and brown liquor.
To the moon, Alice. Another reference nobody gets. Can I tell you my favorite story of the week?
What's that?
The smart replies story.
Okay, so kick that one off because I think I may have missed this one.
So yeah, I put it at the last minute. Yeah. So smart replies, you know, looks at all these responses and makes up a response that you should give an email. And I've talked about how I feel guilty using it. Like the human didn't really send you this reply, which says, yes, I'll be there.
Yeah.
No problem, right? All these smart replies are there. Well, AI goes off our behavior. So guess what smart reply tried to get people to say often, which could, by the way, I think improve the whole world. I love you.
Oh, that was nice of it.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
but you can imagine,
I mean,
you got an email with your boss and you accidentally hit, I love you. Yeah.
There's still that signal though. You know, I'm down with that. Plant that seed, Google.
Maybe Google should force us all to do that.
You know, plant that seed. All this hate going around in this world, plant that little seed of love. I totally dig that, as annoying as it may be to some.
What? Don't even give us the opportunity. Just start sneaking that in at the very end of every one of our emails to each other. And suddenly, like, think of the impact that would have if suddenly everyone's email ended with, I love you. There would be change, man.
You know, with regards to the smart replies, I do like the fact that there's one little detail within them, and that's the exclamation point. Speaking with a colleague of mine over the years regarding corporate communication to people, and I had to train him up. I said, you know, you could say the same thing and put a period on the end versus an exclamation point.
Yeah.
And it just makes a world of difference to an end user. You know, if you just say thank you, period, they just think you any other IT jerk. But if you say thank you at an exclamation point, they feel like, hey, he has personality, even though you're no different.
You know, so I was thinking the other day.
Yep.
Yes, something about that exclamation point really makes a difference. And I'm starting to see that more and more in the smart replies that come up in my messages.
It's constant. You know?
Well, and is that that's a reflection of how you communicate, right? Smart.
I don't know. It's
I talk like that.
You don't add a lot of exclamation points. I have always used tons of exclamation points, almost to the point to where I feel like I overuse them. And so I've had to like peel back in the other direction, but I've definitely noticed my smart replies use them. And I just kind of assumed it was because I do.
No, so it's definitely not me.
Okay.
A friend of mine said that she was dating a guy, Yaley. Which goes to this, and he had a rule that said you should use 3 exclamation points in life, and he'd already used 1.
I like him.
I said, I'm glad you didn't marry him. So I'm old enough, gentlemen. I am old enough. Not only did I use a typewriter, not only did I use a manual typewriter. I was thinking about this the other day. I completely forgot this. In my day. When I took typing class in 6th grade, the way to get an exclamation point was you had to hit a apostrophe, then backspace, period.
Wow.
So you better really mean to use the exclamation
you
point.
Had to, when you, yeah, you had yeah. to do DIY exclamation points.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, huh? How old is that?
We'd be a lot less assertive if it took that much work.
Right.
You know, but see, my personality, I've always tried to be, you know, black and white, binary, if you will, because I personally think that keeps confusion down when I'm trying to communicate a plan to someone or, you know, or whatever that we have going on, because I hate it when I was working in the world of support, saying something to a user and they just totally go the opposite direction of what I was expecting, or they felt like I was going to do a different action at a different time. And so I trained myself to just be as robotic as possible. Mm-hmm. It may sound rude to people, but that's how I got stuff done. You know, just black and white, periods, commas, perfect capitalization. Every now and then throw an exclamation point if I felt like somebody needed a warm and fuzzy, but most of the time, no.
Oh man, I'm so the opposite of that. And I realize
just ask my family.
Yeah, like I so often I'll write an email and then I have to go and part of my checking the email is to make sure I have put in too many exclamation points. Like every sentence ends with it. I'm like, why am I so excited about every single thing I'm saying right now? To replace them with periods, and I have to specifically go in there and do that. I realize I'm admitting too much right now. Yeah. I'm being a little too open to you all. It's because I love you.
So I just bought a book that I put in the rundown.
I see it. It's that doc chat.
The shady character is the secret life of punctuation. and I love this kind of crap. It's geeky as hell. But how all of these various things have the asterisk, the dagger, the life of the hyphen and the dash.
Yeah.
Do you know what the manicule is?
No.
Manicule is a little hand. Manicule's a little hand that you put in pointing at something that was important. It was used very early in printing.
Yeah. Okay.
The at
never
symbol.
Heard that.
It's too bad there's no audiobook version of this.
I know. A little hard.
I know. I would love to see how they pull that off. But it makes sense that there isn't. Interesting. That sounds like a fascinating book.
But you know what? What we call the hashtag is actually called?
A pound, right?
Nope.
No,
nope, it is called the Octothorpe.
It's amazing we don't call it that.
Nope. Yeah, imagine the world would be different if it was, you know, well, just Octothorpe that.
Octothorpe life. Yeah, like that just doesn't.
Thor YOLO.
Title says Karsten. Octothorpe life. I guess colon life. Yeah, it doesn't quite have the same ring to it. Oh boy, that was a fun little tangent. Where should we go next? I have a feeling they're not as fun. Hey, how about the car? So. This one's real quick. Google Maps for CarPlay apparently is now out to support iOS 12. iOS 12 came out yesterday, I think, for iPhone users. Mm-hmm. And what does that bring? That finally brings, from what little I know about Apple, brings third-party maps to CarPlay. So third-party map app support. And now Google Maps rolled out its update today to support it. It lacks voice control through Siri, but apparently when you're running the app, it still has voice control through Google, so you can still kind of use Google's voice control to do the things. And Waze is going to have an update as well very soon. So that was quick. I mean, that was a fast inclusion, and sounds like iOS 12 is opening up a little bit more as far as that's concerned, so that's good.
I'm not smart enough to understand how it works, but when you use Google Maps, Google collects all of this data trying to figure out patterns in where you're going, why you're going, what time of day, and things like that. If it's on iOS, how does that data collection work? Is that something that Apple has approved? Is it something that goes back to the Apple data centers and Apple uses it to make the experience better? I wonder how that works.
Yeah.
Well, couldn't you just use Google Maps thinking of your laptop, right? On mm-hmm. You could use Google Maps just in your browser, and Google Maps operates as Google Maps, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So is it that kind of relationship? It's just running.
But even then, Google, if you're running it in the browser, Google is looking at your IP to figure out your location and things like that.
Yeah, needs to.
So I just wonder, because that's just data collection, and I just wonder how is that jiving on the iOS side, and Apple's trying to be as locked down and secure as it normally is.
If you use your Starbucks app, it says find stores near me, and so you gave permission to share your location.
Okay.
So I think it's just, but the difference is it's sharing your location constantly as it changes.
Right. There's a difference.
And what's the rule that are there any rules about recording that information and how that's done?
Right.
You know, because if I go to get into my vehicle right now and I put my, I don't have a fancy car or anything like that, so I still use my phone for the navigation. And if I was to go in there right now and pull up the nav, it will say, this is how you get to your son's school, because it knows right about this time you're normally going to pick up your son from school for football practice. You know, I never really navigated to the school. I know how to get to the school, but for some reason, Google knows, about this time every day, he's Monday through Friday, he's heading over this way. And I just wondered, how is that on the iOS side?
I'm guessing that kind of predictive stuff isn't happening. Definitely not on the iOS, on the OS level. Maybe it happens when you pull up the map, but I haven't used it to know, but maybe it would have some further insight in there, because within the Google Apps world, you know, you've given Google overview over your calendar and over your navigation history or your location history via Google. So maybe it could make those inferences. But yeah, I don't think it's a total guess on my part, but I don't think it's as detailed or as comprehensive in the Google Apps world on iOS as it is on Android.
We don't have a Google person on speed dial.
Oh, well, we have support, as we tested out a few years ago live on the show. But I don't know if they'd give us what we were looking for. I don't even think that's open anymore. I think that was like the Nexus help line that we got through the settings or something. We do, or we did. We don't anymore. This one, though, is very interesting, related to the car. Google just announced that it struck a major deal with Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi Alliance. And basically starting in 2021, they're going to start putting out vehicles that the infotainment system, and I'm not sure how deep it's going to go, will run on Android. So it's a really big deal for Android. You know, Google's been trying for years now to get Android going in the cars, in vehicles. And I mean, we got to wait a couple of years, but
And by the way, look at that. 2021, what a ridiculous industry, right? The phones are changing constantly. We got six cameras on our phones. Yeah. They're doing all kinds of things. They're flying and taking selfies of us and the car. We'll change that in about 5 years.
This is kind of crazy. We're going to have to wait until then to see anything. But I mean, you're talking millions of vehicles. I guess you're talking millions of phones too, but I don't know why. I guess the turnaround time on vehicles is that much longer. Maybe they already had deals in place that they got to burn.
Yeah, it makes you wonder about the negotiations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true too. The contracts.
Yeah.
I thought I desperately wanted Android Auto. I talked about the show at the time when I was buying a car and I wanted Android Auto. I didn't end up getting it. Mazda is supposed to have put it in like a year ago and it hasn't been in there. But then I had a rental car and put it in. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It's so nanny state.
Yeah. It does definitely control all aspects. Yeah. I have it running on my phone and I have, now I have like a Bluetooth trigger on it. So when I turn on my car, it automatically removes the interface from my phone and replaces it with Android Auto. And that's nice because I can't really interact with it. And it represents what you would get it out of Android Auto. But there are a decent amount of times where I'm like, this is just too limiting. Like, And also, as simple as it tries to make it, it still complicates things as far as getting from one place to another. You don't want to have to tap as many times as you actually still kind of have to.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah. So, but one thing that's really interesting about this partnership, from what I understand, it's not necessarily a deal around Android Auto. It's a deal around Android, the OS.
Android as the OS. Oh, which is a big deal, yeah.
So, who knows? I mean, this is 2021, so who knows where that lands down the line.
So it's an automaker admitting that they can't do OS, consumer-facing OS well.
Right, Right. And so a number
does
of
that mean, does that mean QNX is officially gone now? Because QNX was running on a lot of these cars for many years.
I don't know if it's officially gone. probably still around. But
I can remember seeing Maserati at CES one year, and it had this beautiful IFE in it. And when I asked how is this powered, and they said QNX, and I said, what? It just caught me off guard.
Yeah. Oh, apparently there was an Android Auto update today too. So I guess this would fall in line. I guess this just happened, but the Android version of Apple Music now works with Android Auto. If you're an Apple Music user on Android, then there you go. You're happy.
Google wants everybody happy, apparently.
Yeah.
That makes sense. See, if you just learned that, it'd be okay. Google just wants you to be happy.
It's true. Everybody happy.
That's all they want.
That's all
just
they
for want. You to be happy.
And Google, pay no attention Google to that man you. Behind the curtain.
Tell them what makes you happy, and they will make you happy. This is fine.
Everything just is relax. Just fine.
Just relax, everyone.
Let's you take a break happy. And thank the sponsor of This Week in Google. See what I did there? I got it right. And then we'll get into more news stories. We've got a lot more to talk about. But first, this episode of Twig is brought to you by Grammarly. For those who don't happen to know, we've talked about Grammarly on the show many times. I'm a big fan of Grammarly because, like, I think I'm an okay writer, but I definitely make grammatical mistakes, and Grammarly definitely points them out to me and then helps me correct them. And
exclamation points.
Yes, exactly. you're a little too excited, Jason. And then over time, what I've noticed in using Grammarly regularly is that over time you start making less of those mistakes because you've been corrected so many times. I still use the exclamation points plenty of times, though. That'll never change. So you should check it out because it really does help improve your writing for all sorts of different occasions. It's a great way to double check your important papers, your documents, even avoid future typos. Like I said, they have a free version that you can use to get started and to check it out. And it's available cross-platform. So you can get it online, in desktop, on mobile. It's all kind of running on the device and out of the way until you need it, which is kind of the beauty of Grammarly. Grammarly's premium version allows users to personalize their experience settings to write for different occasions. So, you know, maybe you're writing for school is different than you're writing for work or when you're getting creative. All those things kind of have different different personalization around how you write for those things. And you can have Grammarly remember new words as well. In addition to spelling and grammar, Grammarly Premium helps with advanced punctuation, structure, style within context, vocabulary suggestions, conciseness, and readability for different occasions. And 85% of surveyed premium users identified themselves as stronger writers, and 76% now find writing more enjoyable. Like I said, it's out of the way until you need it, and then it appears, gives you that red underline. You hover over it, and it shows you what the change will be, and you're like, oh, yeah, that does sound a whole lot better. Go to grammarly.com/twig, and you'll get 20% off Grammarly Premium today. That's grammarly.com/twig, T-W-I-G, and check it out for yourself. And we thank Grammarly for their support of This Week in Google. Let's see here. We've got Google and T-Mobile teaming up on 911 calls, location. This has always kind of been a big problem, right? And apparently 80% of the calls to 911 operators come from wireless devices. And the big challenge has been that when a call comes into 911 from a wireless device, they don't have nearly the resolution on location that they do when it comes from a landline. When a call comes from a landline, they know exactly the location of that call, and if they need to send someone out right away, they can. On wireless, it's a lot more elusive, a lot more difficult. For whatever reason, they've never figured this out, and I don't really understand why. It seems like a really important thing to figure out. Well, Google and T-Mobile struck a deal that will pass along Google's emergency location services via the carrier when those calls come through. So at least with T-Mobile, that'll improve things. I'm just amazed that deals like this haven't happened before. Like, make it work, because that's where all the calls are coming from.
Yeah, it makes you wonder where people's priorities are from a business standpoint. But kudos to T-Mobile and Google putting that out, because nobody has a landline these days. It's just, it is what it is.
Yep.
You know, even a big office space uses some type of VoIP option instead of, you know, the traditional, what do they call it, POTS? P-O-T-S.
What was that? Plain old
telephone service.
Television.
Sorry.
Not, hey, you know, I called this show Tech News Weekly. So we can all have mea culpas today. Exclamation points on me.
Octothorpes too.
Yes, Octothorpes all around. What else do we have here? Let's see here. New Mexico has apparently filed a lawsuit against Google and Twitter, actually going for both of them, along with select app developers. Basically, there was a UC Berkeley study that analyzed 6,000, right around 6,000 children's applications found in the Google Play Store. And what they were looking for were they were reviewing them to see if they were in violation, and if so, how, of COPPA. Which basically enforces that data isn't collected on children under the age of 13 without parental consent. Google says that its developers says to its developers that they are the ones that are responsible for informing about their compliance. Apparently, all of these apps were pulled from the Play Store's Designed for Families section. So that's no good if that's the case, and yet they're still not in compliance.
So, Jason, one thing I didn't understand about the story was, is Google accused of doing something wrong or enabling the app producers of doing something wrong?
I think both, from what I understand. They're basically saying, Google, you did something wrong by presenting these apps in such a way.
But I don't think Google actually collected. What I'm saying is, I don't think Google collected the data on young people.
That's a really good question. I wouldn't think so, but yeah, I didn't catch that data point. It seems to me it's more focused around the apps and what the apps are actually pulling, because they were tracking data shared, and this was, you know, via permissions and all that with the apps themselves. Data like personal information, location information, Wi-Fi router, geolocation, insecure transmissions. You know, they're supposed to be secure in some way. And so that tells me that maybe it's on the developer side of things. And that's probably exactly why Google says, hey, we tell developers you must be in compliance. So it's their problem if they're not doing it. Go after them. But then to that extent, I don't know why they would be going after Twitter as well in that regard. Yeah, they're sweeping them all up, it sounds like. I was just signed out of my account, so this might take me a few minutes.
Jason, I'm not going to have you do this again. Jason's going to mess up his password. Jason was locked out. This was a classic on the show.
I think I remember this. Was it Google Voice?
It was Google Voice and two-factor authentication. Yeah.
Yep. And man, I felt so bad for you. Your face just got all pale. You were...
It was awful. So I remember, wasn't it Matt Cutts who rescued you? You back in?
Yes. Yes, Matt Cutts swooped in. He rescued me.
So watch out. Jason's trying to sign in again.
I looked down and said, you've been signed out. I have no idea why that happened, but it did. It's so strange. Must have timed out or something.
No, it's just like the whole battery saver option. It's just another signal.
thankfully, I'm back in and my account still exists. So
good.
We're good. You want to talk about Dragonfly a little bit? Got a few stories related to Project Dragonfly. So Dragonfly is the censored search product that Google has been working on, reportedly working on for the Chinese market. Very controversial, obviously, because it involves a highly censored version of the search product and a whole lot of concessions made to make it operational by the Chinese government standards in the country. Apparently, there's a list of 7 employee names from Google who have left the company in protest that is actually circulating on an internal email list within the company. Most of them first heard of Dragonfly with the original Intercept story, which is what kind of broke the news to everyone. The names really haven't been disclosed publicly yet. I guess the sources on this story weren't weren't willing to share outside of Jack Polson, who is a senior scientist who actually had been reported last month as having resigned in protest of the list. So, yeah, I guess there's still, I mean, obviously there's still a lot of internal debate about this product, and I'm sure there are a lot more people that probably feel as strongly as these who have stepped away.
You got to give those guys credit for standing up for their values and saying, you know what, I'd rather not have a job than be a part of what's going on here. That takes a lot, because it's tough out there.
Yeah.
It's tough out there.
Well, I don't think it's too tough for them.
Well, maybe not for them. Well, unless
but
they're
even,
living
even
over
so,
there.
I still agree with you. I was thinking it could be different if they were, you know, protesting Walmart and there wasn't another Walmart in town.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't belittle what they're doing at all. I agree with you. And importantly, Ann, too, I think that they're doing it in time that may put pressure on. Maybe Google will come to its senses.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Maybe. I hope so.
Maybe. It doesn't seem likely at this point. More and more, it seems like they're continuing further down this path. The Intercept has another story that they published, another biggie, that says that Dragonfly is being crafted to link a user's searches to their personal phone number. So if someone in China does a search via this as yet unreleased Google search product within the country, their personal phone number will be attached to those search queries, which would ultimately obviously make it much easier for them to be tracked depending on what they're searching for. Some of those, you know, blacklisted item search terms include human rights, student protest, Nobel Prize in Mandarin. That's just to name a couple. So
it's phone number scary account. Stuff, man.
And
scary stuff, what people are limited to in different areas of the world. And
yep. Sure.
Man.
Yep. And then I guess there were 16 U.S. House lawmakers last Thursday who addressed a letter to Sundar Pichai. I think there was also a letter like a month before to Sundar Pichai. Anyways, questions about the company's decision to return to China. What restrictions is it going to place on the search engine? You know, I feel like we're hearing about those restrictions, but they want some sort of a formal answer here. What are those restrictions? If Google left China in 2010, why has it suddenly decided that now is the right time to move back in? And maybe this ties back in with the first story of the show, which is, you know, that we don't hear much at all from, you know, the people who you used to hear about in things like
from
this.
Brand.
Larry Page. Is
Sergey
all,
Brin.
Sergey Brin. I mean, they're silent as far as this is concerned. A lot of that control has gone to, why am I suddenly blanking?
Pichai.
Yeah, Sundar Pichai. Yet, you know, in certain very public cases, Google is given the opportunity to talk about certain things, maybe not necessarily related to this Chinese search product, but, you know, the hearing a couple of weeks ago, and instead of sending someone, they send nobody. So it's just weird, like, bottling up of information, this control of information that's happening right now from Google as a company.
Unfortunately, we all still have to realize that Google and Alphabet, they are a business first. And with business, profit is what matters first. You're not in business for fun. You're usually in business for profit.
Yep.
You know, Matthew Iglesias, who's a political writer, said something interesting just now on Twitter that Amazon, Jeff Bezos realized that profit doesn't matter. Growth does. He hates profit. All he does is grow. All he does is spend money to grow.
But it sort of goes hand in hand in his standpoint. His growth gives him more profit.
Matters, right.
You know?
Yeah.
I get that. Smart man.
It's easy to say I don't care about money when money's being thrown at you.
Right. It's a whole different perspective. You know, it's about like the bill that Google has to pay to the EU. You know, it's a lot of money for some people, but
sure.
Yeah. But it's not so much Google or Apple.
Yeah, maybe not so much Google. Absolutely. Let's see here. Google Home Mini, best-selling smart speaker in Q2. I'm not sure I would have guessed that. I would have guessed that the Echo.
No, I wouldn't have either.
Did you listen to that speaker, Mr. Howell?
Listen to it. Like, I have them throughout my home. We have we have two regular Google Homes in the kitchen and the living room, and then we have Minis in the rest of the house.
See, I see those speakers as something that's pretty much good enough for shower time. You know, just the morning shower, and you want to have your ecstasy of gold playing while you're getting ready. That speaker is good enough for that.
Yeah, sure.
But outside of that, I'm sure nobody in the chat room knows what ecstasy of gold is. But I just don't see why those speakers are so popular. I just can't wrap my head around it.
Price, low profile. We've got them in. Actually, no, I also have an Insignia alarm clock that has Assistant. That's in our master bedroom. That was actually a really great buy, I have to say. We got it for like $20. It's normally $50, and it sounds really good for the price. But anyway, the mini we have in our girls' bedrooms, and then the den or whatever. And in that case, like, they are not of discerning taste as far as music is concerned, right? Okay. They don't care. They are stoked about the fact that when they wake up in the morning and they're getting ready for school, they can say, "Hey, G, play Beatles or whatever," and it'll play, and it's totally perfect for them. Would I put that in my kitchen or my living room, or expect great sounding high fidelity music out of it? No, but as an assistant device, it's fine, and it's pretty inexpensive. I think that's why it's doing so well.
Yeah,
there are a lot of really good sales on the Home Mini that bring the price.
There's clearly a market for it that I had no idea about.
Yeah. It's a way to get it in every room, which is obviously that's Google's goal, is to have an entry point, a price point that you can expand it. And I mean, like I said, in our house, we've got these things in every single room now. And it's pretty awesome, like, to be able to announce in one room, "Hey, it's time to wake up." Yeah. And then all the speakers wake up and go, "Good morning. It's time to wake up."
Cool.
And then suddenly 2 minutes later,
is alive.
Totally. It's awesome. It's like, my home is smart. That's cool.
Well, remember way, way, way back when, in like Brady Bunch days, you had an intercom system in the house.
It's kind of the same thing.
Right.
Yep. It's not live intercom, though. That would be pretty cool. It's not that yet. But
there's no reason it couldn't be, right?
No, I don't think so. I think that would be pretty neat if it was live intercom. Maybe someday that we'll get that. But yeah, so the Echo Dot was the second. So the Google Home Mini, 2.3 million shipments in Q2 2018, 20% market share there. The Echo Dot was second at 2.1 million. So the Google Home Mini edged it out by 0.2 million, essentially, shipments. Apple HomePod didn't even make the top five, but apparently counts for 6% market share for the quarter. But I would have thought
it was losing one.
Yeah, in that realm, Apple's not doing nearly as hot. Late to the game and super expensive is kind of what happened to them there.
So, Jason, I know you discussed this a few weeks ago.
What's up?
On a show I wasn't on, but the death of Inbox.
Yeah, so we talked about that last week, I wanted to ask you about it.
And in the rundown, there's also that Google's going to get rid of its browser app and just go with Progressive Web App and Gmail. I turned on Gmail for the first time in probably a year and a half or how long. I got addicted to Inbox, to the updates and priority and crunchy to stuff. This is disturbing me. Are you an Inbox user?
I am an Inbox user, yes, and I am really sad. Like, I'm having to come to terms with the fact that I'm going to have to totally upend how I'm using and used to using email for the past 3 years. And
since we're both Chromebookers, now we also have a PWA app rather than the browser app, which just makes me a little nervous. Is the stuff really going to be downloaded in the background if I haven't opened up the Gmail tab?
Oh, wow.
So you're saying on Chrome OS, if I go to Gmail, or if they're sunsetting the Gmail app? I think I missed that.
The Gmail, it's in the rundown. They're sunsetting the Gmail browser app and going with Progressive Web
app. Offline Chrome app. Gotcha.
Offline. Should be clear. Offline.
Got it. Okay.
So now it's just going to be a PWA, a Progressive Web App, which is fine as far as it goes. But I just have this nervousness that I won't have opened Gmail for 2 days. I get on the airplane and I say, "Oh, No email for the plane. Right? That makes me nervous.
No, it's a forced break.
They're messing up.
That's okay. You still have that $1,000 tiny computer in your pocket that has Gmail.
So, yeah, this has to do with offline only.
Roach, I'd use a lot.
And I think from what I see what you're saying. I missed the progressive web app aspect of this. I just assumed that what it meant was that the Gmail site, the new version of Gmail with the updates that rolled out however long ago, enabled offline access somehow. But you're right. How would I install that if I was suddenly out of internet? Internet activity or access? Right. How would I get to that? Huh. Now I'm curious how that's going to work. I don't find myself in that position very often, but that would suck.
Yeah.
Users will need to enable offline access in their settings. And if you have a school or work account, your G Suite admin may need to allow it as well. That's a big caveat.
Okay. So then I would have to go into settings on Gmail, looking to see if I can find that. And there is an offline tab. Offline unavailable. looks like there is not enough space available for offline mail. This may be caused by insufficient hard drive space or a web browser mode.
So where are you seeing that? Where did you go to that?
I went into Gmail and then into settings and then into offline tab, the offline tab.
Oh, man.
Is that telling me that I don't have much space in my tab. Pixelbook? Because I'd be really
That's ridiculous,
surprised.
Jason. And I don't see the offline tab. Where is that again? So I'm in Gmail. I go to settings.
Yeah.
I see general labels, inbox accounts.
Yeah, and if you go all the way to the right, there's themes. And before themes is offline for me.
I don't see themes and offline. It ends with add-ons and chat.
Oh, and then I have advanced and offline and themes beyond.
Oh, there it is. Offline and themes. So there's offline, right? It went to the next line. Unavailable. Oh, you know what this is? Oh, God, I'm going to kill. I'm going to kill, Jason. I'm going to kill.
Calm down, Jeff. Calm down.
Hold on. Where's my popcorn?
You know what it is? You're going to guess what it is.
Is it Google Apps?
Yes, it is. Contact your administrator for further details.
Oh. Yeah.
Google! This is killer. This really kills me.
Huh.
Now I got to go through 87,000 steps, whatever that happens, on this Fakakta thing. Just to add one Android app, you wouldn't believe what I have to go through. There's literally like 87 steps. And now this is contact your administrator. I am the effing administrator of Google, and I have no effing idea what I'm effing supposed to effing do to get my own effing email. You're killing inbox. You're killing the app. You're not letting me do offline here. This is not cool. Google, are you watching? This is not cool.
The entire
I pay you for this service. It sucks.
Oh, boy.
It sucks.
The entire company is watching you right now, Jeff. And it's
good. You know, I'm a fanboy. I just said earlier, I'm a fanboy. You know, I got all your stuff, right? This is so basic.
Yeah.
You're acting like a cable company. Stop it. Stop it.
I'm trying to understand I get it on your end. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get why it is.
Yeah, watch out.
I get
watch
it.
Watch out. Someone's empathy here. Come on.
But so I'm looking at mine. Mine is not a Google Apps account. This is my personal account, my normal personal Gmail account. It says offline unavailable. Are you getting the same not enough space or it's a different?
No, it just says offline unavailable. Contact your administrator for further details.
Okay.
As if they gave me any details. It's not just further details.
Right.
I got to contact me to find out what I don't know.
Yeah.
You didn't get an email notification about it or anything like that. You just had to read a press release.
Oh, jeez.
So for me, it says it's a space. It says there's not enough space available for offline mail.
So how do you find out what your space is on your machine?
So my machine has 93.8 gigs available.
Jesus.
My Gmail account is at 8% full.
Plus, it's only supposed to – that's obnoxious.
Wow.
So it's only supposed to do like 90 days worth anyway. It's only supposed to do a limited amount of email.
Yeah, I don't believe it when it says that. I think I've looked at both things it could possibly be, either Gmail space or my device space, and neither of them are anywhere near full. In fact, they're near empty. I don't know.
So I search for G Suite offline Gmail. First thing is Chrome app, which is what they're getting rid of.
Well, I suppose they did just mention or just announce these things, but still. Still.
So I go to the enable Gmail web offline for your domain. In your Google admin console, go to, this is torture.
where's Toffel when you need him?
Yeah, well, he was on last week and we were going around the horn about.
We got to get him roused up about this. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Kevin, if you're watching, get roused up, please. We need stand on behalf of Chrome OS users world around.
I just
fix this, Kevin.
I just really don't want to have to get used to not using Inbox again and switching over
either.
All of my bundles. Like, I love the bundles. I use them. I'm just bummed.
I am too.
I am an inefficient email user. Inbox never really worked for me in my workflow, so I never really jumped into it. I'm not an Inbox Zero kind of person.
Neither.
I'll have stuff in there that's just stored for years or what have you in different folders. And then far as my actual inbox, I'll keep things in there marked as unread just as like a reminder for me to, you know, knock something out eventually, you know.
Yep.
And if it's really bad, I'll take those emails and put them on my calendar as a task or something like that. But I never really needed what Inbox tried to offer users as a way of managing their messages. Never really needed it.
When I open Gmail, it just looks really cluttered to me. And
it
chaotic.
Does now. Same here. The one thing I missed
like
in Inbox.
It's a lot slower, too.
I missed one thing in Inbox. One thing only, which was mark as unread.
Yeah.
Because I'd see something and say, no, I don't want to. I want to come back to that. So mark is unread in Gmail, and it never was in Inbox.
It never was in Inbox. That was always so. Then you'd find yourself like I'd get a notification. And I'd be like, don't tap it because I want it to stay unread.
Exactly.
Show me just enough for my notification. Okay, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I was done. It's kind of Inbox.
Silly, yes.
It totally screwed up my workflow, so I was done right then. I may have had Inbox on my phone for an hour.
Oh.
It didn't last.
Yeah, no, I like it, and I'm going to miss it. Maybe my problem with Gmail is that I have the view wrong. I had it on default, and it shows all the like little attachments and pill-shaped bubbles and stuff.
I think I tried Cozy. I believe that's what
Comfortable
mine...
Comfortable and Compact are the other ones.
Or maybe it was Comfortable. Either way, I don't. It's still a little too small little too much too slow. Compared to what it used to run like.
So then is Gmail what you actually use, Ant, or have you found like a third-party solution?
Nope, I use Gmail.
Yeah. Okay.
I route everything from personal to business through Gmail one way or another.
Yeah.
Google. So I'm doing the instructions right now. Go to your app's G Suite Gmail user settings. So I click on that link to do that. And then it says scroll down to offline. It's not there.
Huh.
I won't bother you. I won't bother the world with this anymore right now, I promise. But
frustrating. Frustration.
We have the Google change log.
Well,
we should have a Google rant with Mr. Jarvis and Mr. Toffel.
The Google rage log.
Yes. There it is. I got it. Enable.
Oh, you did it.
Save. Now let's see if it works. Okay, so save. Loading.
That's a new podcast, the Google Rage Log.
Loading.
You can have that, Jeff.
Loading. Why is it so hard, Google?
I don't know.
What's the problem?
It's not going to work, dude. It's not
settings
have
been
work.
Saved. So now I'm going to reset. I'm going to go to my Gmail settings.
And see, and I've been without my Chromebook for
it's
a couple months now, so I'm totally behind.
Still unavailable.
Dang, after all that, not even available.
All right, well, enough of that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I wanted to make sure that we resolved it somehow. And even after all that. Yeah, we resolved it to the point to know that even when you jumped through all the hoops, you still didn't make it through to the
Kevin Toffel, we got to get him really mad about this. Or I'm fine, Kevin, if you belittle me and say, oh, Jeff, this is really easy. Let me show you how. That's fine.
That's fine, because
that's
then
okay.
You'll know.
It's fixed.
Because then there's a resolution. Right,
right, exactly. That's totally cool. Speaking of the change log, why don't we jump into the Google change log?
The Google change log.
Chrome OS 9 is rolling out now. If you haven't got it already, probably have. But if you haven't, you can look forward to a new material theme. Lots of white and pill-shaped bars and bubbliness. You'll probably like the changes. An improved and more powerful Omnibar. Some more stuff happens in the Omnibar. Linux for Chromebook beta is now supported, running Linux apps, editors, command line tools, that sort of stuff. There's a nightlight mode for shifting the color display based on like sunrise, sunset, and that sort of stuff, and a whole lot more. Did you guys get the Chrome OS 69 update? See, your tabs are kind of like rounded now.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah. Pretty.
Bubbly things. Deal. All about the bubbly things.
Well, pretty.
RCS, that's Rich Communication Services. We've definitely talked about in previous episodes. Supported on Android. Hardly ubiquitous standard at this point, as much as Google would like it to be. So now Google and Samsung have announced that Samsung is further committing to Google's RCS standard, which is probably going to help along those lines.
Oh, that's big.
There's going to be a number of older Samsung devices that will now work with Google's RCS technology, along with all new Samsung devices going forward. Samsung, obviously, is the biggest manufacturer of Android devices. So this is, yeah, it's kind of a big deal. If you're looking for broad support, this is a great way to cover a heck of a lot of devices in one swoop. Now we just got to get the carriers kind of on board
as
well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Kudos, Samsung.
Yeah, not bad. Google's mobile app development tool, Fabric, is going away. It's not going away, really. It's folding into Firebase, which is Google's current mobile and app development platform. And so if you're using Fabric, you should know that support for that is going to end mid-2019. But like I said, that's going to fold into Firebase. So transition over to Firebase if you have not already. And then air quality mapping via Street View cars. This has been happening for a while. They've been testing it. They're now expanding this with 50 newly equipped Street View cars that are ready to do this type of data collection. It allows them to kind of show snapshots at a moment of time of air quality in a particular area that the car happens to be. That's kind of fuel for data scientists to use with other air quality models. So kind of using these vehicles that they already have out, the fleet of cars already out there, to generate data that could be really useful for research and a whole lot more. I didn't get a chance to read this about the AMP project. I'm wondering, Jeff, if you did.
This was important. So, and Leo were here, he could start his AMP rant. not ant rant, AMP rant. When Google started AMP, Accelerated Mobile Pages, which we won't bother explaining again because I think you all know what it is, they said it would be an open source project, but Google was running it. And the question always was the governance. Now, they had plenty of contributors to the code, and they were open in a lot of ways, but Google was still the boss. Well, they've hit the point now, they think it's a scale, but I think it's also just the right thing to do, where they're opening it up. So there'll be a high poobah chamber of contributors who will decide things, and it'll be more open source, which I think will give it more faith in the marketplace. So I think it's a good move.
Oh.
Even if you are messing up my email, Google, I said something nice about you.
Every nice thing has to be balanced with a criticism. That's how we make sure that Google continues to improve. And finally, YouTube Gaming, that app that apparently had no reason to exist outside of YouTube itself. I think Google is now realizing that. they released this app, YouTube Gaming, to be kind of the home hub for gaming content with YouTube. And I think now they're realizing that, hey, YouTube's a great place for that to be hosted. So we'll put a tab in YouTube instead, and you can get to it from there. So as far as I understand, that's kind of the change that's being made. The YouTube gaming app is going to go away. It's all going to be folded into the YouTube experience itself. And, I'm guessing that somewhere down the line, Google Play Music is folding into YouTube Music. Somewhere down the line, they're going to make this realization with YouTube Music, and then YouTube Music is going to become a tab inside of YouTube, and it'll just be even that much more confusing.
I don't fault them for trying to silo the whole gaming platform.
Totally.
But it is what it is. Everybody still just watches it on YouTube or Twitch.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and you can still get to that gaming experience, you know, and yep. actually they're making improvements to, you know, finding kind of channels dedicated to games. Like this is the Fortnite channel. These are all the people that are broadcasting within, yeah. you know, Fortnite. I just realized Kevin C. Toefel in chat. Did you guys see this? Or in the chat room anyways. says, bring it on. I'm trying to see if he has any sort of insight into what you were
this
saying.
This is really simple, Jeff. Just switch to Yahoo Mail.
Oh, okay. Not there you go. Funny, Kevin. There's your solution.
Not funny.
Cool. Not Thank funny you for bringing this the solution to Jeff's
This is
problem,
how
Kevin.
You troll, folks.
I'm going to switch to MCI Mail.
And that is the Google changelog.
And I like you, Kevin Toefel.
Let's see here. Before I get to the final ad and then we get to tips and tricks and anything.
He said later on, he said, I joined late, so not sure what you were discussing.
Oh. Still, okay. Well played. I think even if you didn't know, you knew because you played it very well. Any last story that you want to get in there before we do the last ad? And
Hold on.
I don't know. I just want to make sure that. I thought this was interesting. Path is going away. Remember Path?
Yeah, I do remember Path.
Yeah, Path. It was a challenger to Facebook. Once almost bought by Google, if I remember correctly. Google was going to buy Path, and I'm not sure exactly what happened. Oh, yeah, that's right. Tried to buy it for $100 million when it was just months old, says the TechCrunch article.
Wow.
That was a mistake.
And, if you only knew at that point. Really, when you're at that crossroads, you can go two different directions and you can take the money now or you can bet on the future. Obviously, they bet on the future and you don't know at that moment whether that was the right bet or not. But obviously,
this is true. So, ask Vero.
Yeah. a lot of companies bet on the future and it doesn't happen. But anyways, they're going away. Any others?
Mark Benioff spent $190 million buying Time Magazine when he could have just subscribed to it for $30.
He really wants to make sure he keeps getting the subscription delivered to his door.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do with Time Magazine. When was the last time you bought a Time Magazine, either of you?
Well,
how many years?
Oh, I don't even know. Too long for. I don't know if I've ever bought a Time Magazine, to be honest. Oh,
they always have some of the best photography, but I hardly ever pick up one to keep. But I love their photographers, so.
I mean, that used to be a powerhouse magazine. That was like a must.
It was, but who needs a general interest magazine anymore? So if the hey moguls out there, if you're gonna put big money into saving journalism, I got some ideas for you. Just call me. Yeah.
Mark, hit Jeff up. Yeah. He's got ideas.
Yeah.
OnePlus has a TV that they're gonna release.
That's kind of cool.
They're gonna do a TV here pretty soon, I think. And you can actually help name it. They, you know, because they like to do their.
Did they not learn from their previous mistakes?
I don't know.
With the naming convention. What was it? TV McTV box or something like that?
Yes, right. Or McTV pants or whatever. I don't think it's going to be the kind of thing where the community votes and whatever it ends up being, they have to do it.
Oh, okay.
But I think they're opening it up for ideas, and if you're part of the community, you can give your idea and maybe it'll be chosen. But yeah, I think they're giving themselves more control. What are you showing us, Jeff?
I don't know if you can see, barely see. You know, there's turkeys and deer in my backyard.
Turkey and deer.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's some turkeys.
That looks like my backyard, man.
And there's some deer just hanging out together.
Dude, that is so cool.
Peace in the kingdom.
I wish I could look out my window and see wildlife.
Yeah, that's every day at my house, too.
I love the turkeys best of all. Dang. The deer are just tall rats that eat your shrubs. But
it's so normal to you guys. You don't even blink, but that's awesome. Every once in a while, I catch turkeys walking down the middle of the road here in Petaluma. There's like this pack of turkeys that everybody's just used to seeing, and they roam the city. It's weird.
Turkeys travel in packs, or is that just when they're...
Well, I don't know. There's like more than a couple of them together. So I don't know if it's called a pack when you're talking about turkeys. What is it called then?
What do you call a flock of wild turkeys?
A flock.
they are called a rafter. Oh, no. That's only if they're domesticated. Wild turkeys are still a flock.
They're a flock. Okay. Thank you. Exclamation points, Tech News Weekly, and packs. These are the three mistakes I have made on today's episode of This Week in Google. All right. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and take a break, and then we will jump into tips and tricks and numbers and all that. But before we get there, this episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Wink. You can spell that W-I-N-C. If I ask you to pick out a wine that you'll love but you haven't had before, where would you even start? Wink makes it easy to discover great wines. That's what it's all about. And if you like wine, you're going to love this service. Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste. It's all personalized for you and shipped right to your door. And starts at just $13 a bottle. And let me tell you, it's pretty awesome coming home to a box of something on your doorstep. When you know that there's wine inside of that box, it's even better. Delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It ends up being the best day of your month. You're like, all right, well, what am I going to drink tonight? Because this looks really good. You just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or be able to translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? And how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink actually sends wines curated to your taste based on your answers. They've got this down to a science. The more wines that you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections become. And Wink isn't just a wine club, it's a wine company. Wink actually works directly with top winemakers and growers from around the world to make all of their own wine. Each month, there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. They also partner with local artists to develop wine labels that are unique works of art. And, you know, you can tell a lot about a wine by the label that's on it. It kind of almost to a certain degree, it helps sell the wine inside, and it gives you an indication about what you're about to drink. No membership fees. You can skip any month. You can cancel any time. Shipping is covered. And if you don't like a bottle that they send you, they'll actually replace it with a bottle that you'll love. No questions asked. So sit back, relax, or even celebrate with Wink. You don't have to settle for the same bottle of wine that you always get anymore. Discover great wine today. Just go to trywink.com/twig, and you're going to get $20 off your first shipment. That's TRYWINC. trywink.com/twig, and you get $20 off. trywink.com/twig, and we thank Wink for their support of This Week in Google.
Shout out for Wink.
What's that?
I like the fact that most of the time I drink scotch whiskey or what have you, but I wanted to try Wink, and of course I couldn't go through all of those bottles of wine. I'm not a total wino. And it was time for my next box to ship, but they have that built-in service that says, you know what, if you just want to pause it for a minute here, just hit pause.
Yeah.
And we're not going to ship you anything right now. We're not going to bill you anything right now. When when it comes around for the time again, we're going to send the next box out to you, but we'll give you a little bit of time. I like that.
Yeah. You can kind of put it on pause and pick it up when you need to.
It's a cool right company.
Right on. Okay. So, Ant, why don't we give you first stab here? What is your stuff? It's in here as Ant's stuff. What you got? Oh,
you're muted.
I keep hitting that button. Sorry.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Jeez. I wanted to mention
just a strong silent type.
The Hurricane Florence that recently passed by here in the Carolinas, specifically North Carolina. You mentioned earlier about Google saying that you can make a donation and Google will match that. And I'm all for that. But there's something else that I think and that needs to be considered is giving blood. I don't know where everybody stands on that, but there's a lot of people that were injured and hurt and it's pretty serious. And a lot of times the blood banks, they need able-bodied people that can give blood to help save lives in these serious situations like this. So if you can and you're able, hit up your local blood bank and just say, hey, I'm here to give a pint of blood and help somebody out that's in need. If you don't want to do that, then definitely, by all means, send $10 to the Red Cross or somebody to help out all of those that are affected by Hurricane Florence and how slow she moved over our region, 1 mile per hour. It was brutal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can't even imagine. That's a really, really good point. There are many different ways that you can give to in times of disaster and all this kind of stuff. It doesn't just have to be money. Some people would prefer not to give money, right? If you give blood, you know it's going directly to the cause.
Yep.
Depending on where you're sending your money, people might not have that, you know, the utmost confidence. Really just depends. So that's a really good point. Excellent. Jeff, what's your number?
So this won't surprise people, I'm afraid. Nearly half of cell phone calls will be scams by 2019. Says a report, and these are also scams that practice what we call neighbor spoofing.
Yep.
Where you think, oh, this call must be okay because it looks like my call because it has the same area code and the same exchange, but no, it's a spoofed number and it's a recorded voice saying something or a robo voice or whatever, or just a bozo voice, and it's making telephoning unusable, not just cell phones, but also home phones. I'm finding too. Just while I was on the show, I saw two. Luckily, the phone company now says they're spam, but it's gotten awful. Telephoning has now become useless. So that was a happy way to end the day. But don't fall for any scams, people.
That's crazy. The amount of phone calls that you get with your area code or something that's close to you or whatever. And it really sucks when you're waiting for a call from someone that you know you don't have in your book, like maybe a business is going to call you back or whatever. Then you get that call that's unidentified, and you pick it up, and there's like a 3-second pause and then the click. And then we're calling because we've been trying to notify you. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, I've been taken. I remember I was on with you, Jeff, and I think Stacy was on that episode too. This was a couple of months ago, and I showed off the Google phone app, and they made a change where you can go in there and you can redirect identified spam calls from directly within the app so that it never hits your phone.
That. Yeah.
Has that cut down? Because it's totally cut down on my phone.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
I used to get way more calls, and now I get far fewer. And it's specifically.
You want to repeat how to do that again for folks?
Here, let me not show it.
I need to see that feature.
So let's see here. It's not blocked numbers. So if you go in, okay. So this should be good to show. I don't know if you have my overhead shot. So I'm in Google's phone app. I'm not going to go back out because then you'll see all my calls and everything. But if you go into the settings of the Google phone app, there's the caller ID and spam. When you go into there, filter spam calls. You want that on. And I think it's, if you haven't ever switched it on, it's off by default.
Yeah, mine is off. Okay.
So switch that on. And it totally has helped for me. I used to get so many calls every day, and I get the big red banner identified spam.
Yeah, I see so many red screens all the time. It's annoying.
Yeah, and so that's Google's identification that triggers that red screen. This is taking it the next step to say if they already know that it's a spam and they would normally show you the red screen instead, they're just going to prevent it from even ringing your phone. It might go to your voicemail, but you won't see it ever.
And the other thing is in your history, if you long, so you go to your history of phone calls, if you long press on the phone number, you can block and report a spam that number.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do try to do that.
Helping other folks. Right. So between the two of them, it has helped. Mm-hmm. But it still happens.
It does. Yeah. Calls definitely still get through, but minimizing them to sane levels really does help.
Yep.
Speaking of blocking things, my app that I'm going to show off today was actually on last night's episode of All About Android. Last night's guest, Rose Bahar from Android Police, showed it off. And it's a great app. So it's worth, it's worth featuring here. It's a 99-cent app called Bouncer. And you can see there, Bouncer, temporary app permissions. The idea behind it is that you might not always want permissions for an app to be open. And so what happens is that if I happen to, let's see here. So this is the Fortnite installer, right? Device. Would you like to remove this permission? Okay. So I shouldn't have to do that. So if I go into Fortnite installer, let's see if I can show this off the way I did last night. It's probably just going to work totally differently now because I'm trying to demonstrate it a second time. So it'll go in here. Have I already? I may have already given the permission for this. So Fortnite installer, it's unlocked, it's unknown. Okay, so if I was to go into Bouncer and say that this is okay, keep the permission so it can write the device files. I might be getting this backwards, so my apologies if I am. Let's see here, update. No, it's not doing it. So what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to recognize that you're opening a permission for an app, and then the second you hit home, it would undo that permission change. And I think I'm getting it twisted up and showing it off. If you want to see an actual demonstration of this, watch last night's All About Android. I promise this was not
a great guest on there.
Yeah, no, Rose was great. But the idea behind it is that if you have it running perfectly on your apps, then it's working in the background. So when you go to use this particular app and it wants access to your camera and you don't want it to always have access to that camera, but you don't mind it having it now, you can temporarily grant access to that app for the camera. And then the second that you hit home to exit that app at the end of your session, it will change that permission back.
Flips it right back. Okay.
So it's like a temporary, I mean, it's exactly what it describes. It's a temporary app permission switch. And, I'm not doing a very good job of demonstrating it, but you should check it out for yourself. I did it properly last night, and it was kind of cool that it just kind of happens in the background. It's 99 cents, and it's just kind of a cool way to kind of keep control of your permissions in a different way. It's called Bouncer, and yeah, check it out. But that is, I think that's it. I think we've reached the end of Octothorpe life, as it were. And this was a lot of fun. Ant Pruitt, really appreciate you hopping on today and hanging out with us for a while.
It is my pleasure and an honor. Trust me. Right on. Truly an honor.
Cool. Ant _
It's always great to have your friend
on Twitter. And of course, you write for TechRepublic.com. You've got more stuff coming all over CBS Interactive, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So best of luck there. You're also doing photography, doing a lot of drone photography. Stop.
Drone photography.
Photography.
I have this product right here that was sent to me. I recorded a little quick first look earlier today, but it is a horrendous video and my edit was crap. So I'm going to have to re-record and maybe I'll get that first look up tonight on my YouTube channel.
What was that controller? What is it?
That is called the Loop Deck Plus. Last year, the company sent me their original model, and I reviewed it. And it's a console that you use with Adobe Lightroom to help give you more of an analog feel for processing your images. You know, instead of using your mouse to click on the sliders and stuff like that, you can use this device that has knobs on it to make it a little more natural for you.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it doesn't really work well for my type of editing because I like to use a Wacom tablet and a stylus because I do brush strokes and things like that in my photos. But as of today, they had a firmware update that allows this device to work with Lightroom, Aurora HDR, Capture One Beta, and now with Adobe Premiere Pro. So I'm looking forward to trying this out as far as color grading my videos because it would be nice to be able to use knobs and stuff to try to make sure you have skin tones right in your videos. So it's going to be fun. It's going to take me, you know, a week or so to review it, but I'm looking forward to it.
That's cool. Yeah, it really reminds me of a lot. Like in the audio world, you can get these audio controllers. It looks very similar to an audio controller. Mm-hmm. And the trick with those always is like, yes, they promise a lot, and there's a lot of capability within them. But you have to stick with them long enough to kind of rewrite your processes. Your approach for working with tools has to change on a fundamental level to include that control surface for you to really get maximum benefit out of it. And that takes a little bit of time and a little bit of effort to make that happen. But once you get
I recently did a video about Premiere Pro and its keyboard shortcuts. And because I hate using a mouse, you know, I used to spend a whole lot of time in Linux, so I never really saw a mouse. But when I'm doing video editing and I can just use keyboard shortcuts to navigate through the screen, it makes that edit so much faster. So I'm a little nervous about pulling this device in. But at the same time, I'm like, ooh, those knobs will make it easier to make my skin just really pop on the screen, you know?
Right on. So people will be able to find your kind of video walkthrough of that. Where would they find that? On Tech Republic?
No, this is going to be on YouTube. I have a write-up already. I don't know if they put it up today or not on Tech Republic, but I'm going to do my video on my YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/AntPruitt. It's pretty much the channel based on getting beginners started in the world of digital content creation. I don't always talk about photography. I also talk about videos, and every now and then I talk about writing, because sometimes it takes a little work to get something on the page and published.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep. Right on. Well, Ant, appreciate it, and best of luck with that. And we'll keep tuned in to read that once it's all
Thank
ready.
Thank you.
And watch it. Jeff Jarvis, great to have you back, man. Are you still upset with the whole Gmail thing?
Yes, I am. Okay. I really am. This is a big deal. All these apps. I'm sorry. One last time. All these apps users you have out there, all these G Suite users you have out there, and all the Chromebooks you're selling, think this through, Google. Jeez, think like a customer. You used to do that. I'm disappointed in you. I'm leaving it there. Right. Now, if you come back and tell me how I'm being stupid, that'll be fine. It'll fix it. It'll be okay. You'll be forgiven. Right now, I'm not happy.
Jeff Jarvis, not happy.
Not happy.
Well, thank you once again, sir. It's always a pleasure. Buzzmachine.com. To check in on his latest rants. And then me, I'm just here at Twit, you know, doing my Twit thing. I'll be on New Screensavers this weekend. And, of course, Tech News Weekly, which I already kind of slid in there earlier. It wasn't intentional, but there you go.
Yeah, sure. It was a plug. We know it. Using our show for yours. You see where your loyalties are.
Man. I swear it was an accident. And then next week I take over Know How. I've got a season of Know How. Got an announcement on that coming up very soon. So that'll hit the Know How feed early next week. I think will be kind of a teaser on that. It actually might even be part of tomorrow's episode with Megan and Flo's last episode of Know How for this kind of section that they've been doing on IoT. So if you want to watch that, you know, check it out in the next couple of days. It'll hit the feed, and I'll be there through the end of the year, and then we'll see what we do from there. So looking forward to that. But Leo is going to be back next week, so if you've been waiting for Leo to come back to This Week in Google, you're going to get your wish. He'll be back next Wednesday. If you want to go to twit.tv/TWIG, you can find all the information that you need to know about This Week in Google. You can get the podcast subscription links. You can find audio, video, every single episode, all the way back to episode one. And then information on the live recording. We record live every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, 2000 UTC. And if you go to twit.tv/live, you can be part of the chat room like Kevin Toefel was a little bit earlier, and so many other people who have been pitching in on the chat room throughout the course of the show and having a great time while they watch live. But that is it for this week. Hope you've enjoyed it. We will see you next week on another episode of This Week in Google. Take care, everybody. Bye.